supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
A scathing grand jury report about clergy sexual abuse of children in Pennsylvania was released today. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. The report details decades of alleged misconduct and cover-up in six of the state's eight Roman Catholic dioceses: Allentown, Scranton, Harrisburg, Greensburg, Erie, and Pittsburgh, implicating 300 so-called predator priests statewide. Attorney General Josh Shapiro had harsh words for the church today at a press conference in Harrisburg.
The pattern was abuse, deny, and cover-up. The effect not only victimized children, it served a legal purpose that church officials manipulated for their advantage. The longer they covered it up, the less chance law enforcement could prosecute these predators because the statute of limitations would run.
Joining me now to discuss is Kevin McCory, editor of Keystone Crossroads, WHYY's statewide reporting project. And Kevin, let's start with this long-awaited grand jury report. What did it find?
So it's a roughly 900-page report that's thought to be the most comprehensive of its kind anywhere in the country. And it paints a very horrid portrait of activity that occurred in the diocese that you mentioned going back at least 80 years. It implicates these 300, quote, predator priests statewide in hundreds of parishes in 54 of Pennsylvania's 67 counties. The grand jury said it reviewed 500,000 pages of internal church documents and secret archives, and it found credible allegations by more than 1,000 victims, but believes the real number is in the thousands. The bulk of the activity described within that investigation does fall outside of Pennsylvania's statute of limitations for sexual crimes, and clergy members, both named and currently blacked out of the report, are not expected to face criminal charges.
Kevin, what specifics come to mind?
Well, there's some hard things in there, like I mentioned. One priest in the Diocese of Harrisburg allegedly abused five sisters in a single family. Another in the Diocese of Greensburg is said to have impregnated a 17-year-old girl, married her, and then divorced her months later. A priest in the Diocese of Erie allegedly admitted to assaulting at least a dozen boys, and the bishop later thanked him for, quote, all that you have done for God's people. Shapiro highlighted much of this in the press conference. It was an impassioned 45-minute event that began with a pre-produced video featuring some of the victims who testified before the grand jury. Here we're about to hear from 37-year-old Caroline Fortney and 48-year-old Sean Dougherty.
Just think, like, the word God makes me think of him, and I just...
You're being groomed to get used to a grown man's hands, you know, on you regularly.
So he would always have his hands on me.
When you have the priest touching you every day, you know, that's a hard memory to have.
Kevin, I believe this report was 2 years in the making. Give us some of the background and why it took so long to come out.
Well, it was a long investigation, first and foremost, and the grand jury had to go through, like we said, you know, 500,000 documents and so much testimony and, you know, heard from so many witnesses there. And then once we got to the point where we thought the report was going to come out in late June, there started to be objections. Now, the diocese themselves didn't publicly fight the release, but some of the clergy named in the report slowed it down with legal objections. They say it's unconstitutional for a grand jury to disclose individual names without actually charging people with crimes. And that's become kind of a debate in general about grand juries through this story. Now, the PA Supreme Court agreed with that idea, at least in interim way. And they said, well, what we're going to do is put out a report that redacts the names of any of the clergy who made objections. And that's what we got today. Now, meanwhile, some of the current bishops of these parishes have been apologizing. And the grand jury specifically praised the Erie bishop, Lawrence Persico, acknowledging past abuse, unmasking the abusers, and encouraging accountability.
Today, I pledge the following two victims. The Diocese of Erie will not shroud abusers in secrecy, no matter who they are or how long ago the abuse has occurred.
Kevin, what might we expect going forward?
Well, the grand jury made recommendations that will be sure to reignite conversations in the state legislature around all this. It said that sexual abuse of a minor should have no criminal statute of limitations. So that would put it on the same plane as murder, where you could file a criminal complaint anytime. The grand jury also said that people who were abused in the past should have a 2-year window to retroactively file civil legislation to seek financial damages. Now, that's very controversial. The church has always opposed that sort of idea, and they say that would cause many of their dioceses to go bankrupt. I'd also expect this to spark a new conversation among Catholics about what they think the church will do and should do about all this. Our reporter Lindsay Lazarski went to the Allentown Diocese today to speak with parishioners. She met Mary Ann Chickie, who is a devout Catholic who goes to daily Mass and has several priests in her family.
This is one of the biggest things that stops people from becoming Catholics, or our biggest problem as Catholics. Every religion has something, but boy, oh boy, I know this is a biggie.
The other thing to watch for is that Attorney General Shapiro wants a version of this report released without redactions. And so the PA Supreme Court is going to hear legal proceedings on all those questions in September.
And Kevin, you will be among the guests tomorrow morning at 10 on Radio Times with Marty Moscow-Wayne, further probing this report.
That's correct.
Kevin McCrory is editor of our Keystone Crossroads project. Thanks for joining us this evening.
Thanks, Dave.
Let's get more perspective on this topic. Joining me next is Rocco Palmo, a Philadelphia-based writer who runs Whispers in the Loggia, a prominent blog about the Catholic Church. Rocco, welcome back to Newsworks tonight.
Thanks, Dave.
Your entry in the blog today is entitled, In Pennsylvania Church, the Weaponization of Faith. Expand on that title.
That is one of the many searing comments we heard from the Attorney General earlier today, Dave. It's sex abuse is a story that goes back 40 years across the Catholic world, beginning in Ireland, where the Pope is actually going next week, even before the U.S. But outside of a state inquiry in Australia and two in Ireland 10 years ago, global church has never seen anything like this. So the impact of this is ricocheting not just around the state, but around American Catholicism and even beyond already.
To the extent that you've had time to digest at least highlights of this some 900-page report, what jumped out at you?
I think just the detail of it, the shattering graphic nature of it, the scope. I mean, this is a grand jury that did its work. And interestingly, I mentioned Bishop Persico of Erie earlier. Persico has really been the most outspoken figure in the Commonwealth of the six bishops here. And he's the only one who accepted an invitation to testify to the grand jury. And, it's what happens from here. It's, again, as Kevin said, there's that major fight of the statute of limitations. But in many ways, this report is going to change the power dynamic of the American church, because perhaps the most prominent figure, living figure, still active, implicated in an alleged cover-up is Cardinal Donald Wuerl, who was the Bishop of Pittsburgh for 20 years until 2006 and is now the Archbishop of Washington and a major advisor to Pope Francis. Wuerl is arguably seen as one of the two most powerful Americans at Francis's side. He's already past the retirement age of 75, but he's... what the hits the world's been taking today just from Catholic commentators and from the contents of the report are, again, just staggering.
Why, in your estimation, is it so seemingly difficult for the church to really get ahead of this story and put it to bed, not the allegations, but to move forward so that this doesn't happen in the future?
Well, again, this is the kind of process that if the church tried doing internally, it wouldn't be seen as credible, I think. If anything, this is the most or another intense piece. I mean, we're back at 2002 again, where, when the scandals first erupted in Boston, you had the Spotlight team, and then it became a national scandal of abuse and cover-up. But if anything, I think a key piece of this is that in 2002, when the U.S. bishops enacted what's called the Dallas Charter, zero tolerance norms, one strike and you're out, in terms of an abuse of a minor. They didn't finish the job in terms of enforcing accountability upon themselves, and they didn't, in terms of what lay people can expect in terms of the transparency and all of that. Now, because of the, not related to this, but it's been a kind of perfect storm, if you will, the allegations against now Archbishop Theodore McCarrick, the first member of the College of Cardinals to resign in 100 years, the first ever to resign over allegations of abuse of a minor and misconduct with adults and seminarians and young priests. This has forced the question. And I'll tell you, I've been covering this story for 15 years since it broke in Boston, and I have never seen the anger and the demands for purification, penance on the part of church leadership, and real concrete change as intense as they've been the last 24 hours.
Is that intensity being heard and understood at the Vatican?
I think it is. You have to remember it's August, so they say the only things left in Rome in August are Connie and Americani, dogs and American tourists. But again, next week we're going to see arguably the Pope's most significant head-on collision with a country, completely decimated by sex abuse in the church when Francis goes to Ireland for 2 days. It's as of today, because of the McCarrick situation, but now this grand jury dropped right in the middle of it. The leadership of the U.S. bishops were holding crisis talks in Washington. We have not yet had a statement from those talks. They were supposed to extend through the afternoon. So again, this is, this is obviously a report that goes back 70 years, and it's not the kind of thing where the resolution is going to be seen overnight. This is going to take time. One thing I'm intrigued to see is, given several deputies to bishops, Pennsylvania bishops who were named in the report, one of them is the Bishop of Allentown, Al Schlert, who was the COO of the diocese there for 20 years, the current Bishop of Pittsburgh, Dave Zubik, who was now Cardinal World's top deputy when World was Bishop of Pittsburgh. It's going to be interesting to see if they can maintain the confidence of their priests and of their people, because Francis has really changed the game in terms of, if you don't have the confidence of your people, you really can't effectively serve in office anymore. And these guys are younger than retirement age. So, again, that accountability and how it's enforced here is going to be one of the fascinating things going forward.
Rocco, thanks again for offering perspective on NewsWorks Tonight.
Anytime, Dave. Thank you.
Philadelphia-based writer Rocco Palmo runs Whispers in the Loggia, a prominent blog about the Catholic Church. In other news this evening, a bipartisan group of lawmakers from our region are calling for Congress to send an even stronger signal to Russia to keep them from meddling in November's elections, though it's not clear their calls will translate into action. WHYY congressional correspondent Matt Laszlo reports.
After President Trump recently took the side of Russian President Vladimir Putin over that of U.S. intelligence officials after they met in Helsinki, many GOP lawmakers took the rare step of criticizing him or his words. Central New Jersey Republican Congressman Leonard Lance even pushed a resolution commending and supporting the intelligence agencies, something that's rarely done.
I think it's important for the Congress in a bipartisan capacity to defend the intelligence agencies. I have great faith in Director Coates and in the other officials leading those agencies.
And South Jersey Republican Congressman Tom MacArthur also rebuked the president, arguing his words sent a bad message.
I disagreed with them. I think he tried to make amends when he came back and clarify, but they were unfortunate, and I've made it clear. Look, I've never hesitated to oppose the president when I think it's appropriate, and I did on the Helsinki comments.
MacArthur is behind a bill that forces the administration to alert Congress if a foreign country is meddling in the election, and another bill that seeks to get foreign companies out of the business of supplying American states and localities with election equipment, like voting software.
You know, that gets to this whole issue of how we allow foreign companies to invest in the United States.
MacArthur says the U.S. needs to send a forceful message across the globe.
We cannot have a foreign belligerent governments tampering with our elections. And Russia, by all accounts, has tampered and attempted to have an impact on our elections. We have to stop that.
Over in the Senate, a slew of bills are also picking up broad support. One bill that's sponsored by Florida Republican Marco Rubio and Maryland Democrat Chris Van Hollen basically says if Russians are caught interfering in the 2018 elections or future elections, automatic and very deep sanctions would be triggered. Pennsylvania Republican Senator Pat Toomey says he likes the intention of the bill.
Yeah, I want them to know that if they were to meddle with our elections again, they will have to pay a very, very high price in the hope that that knowledge will dissuade them from doing that.
But some lawmakers fear that bill could have the unintended consequence of hurting U.S. companies that unwittingly are tied to Russian firms in this increasingly interconnected global economy. Toomey says he's reviewing that sanctions bill, and he's torn on it because he doesn't want Congress to act merely to act.
I'm open to it, but I want to make sure that we think it through carefully.
But Republican senators defeated a bill to send even more money to states to help gird against foreign interference this year. The GOP argues the states still haven't spent all of the $380 million Congress already sent them to fight intrusion ahead of November. But Delaware Democratic Senator Chris Coons says even his home needs more help from Washington.
Even in my little state of Delaware, that's just a down payment on improving our cybersecurity.
Coons is also pushing the Secure Elections Act, which would help streamline American elections. And he says the recent assessment from the Director of National Intelligence, Dan Coats, should leave no one guessing on what Russia plans to do this fall.
That would solve some issues around security clearances and access to information for election officials. But frankly, we could not have gotten a clearer warning than we got from DNI Coats saying that, I think memorably, like all the warning lights are blinking red and Russia continues to be a threat to our upcoming elections.
There's still no vote scheduled for any bills related to election security or Russian sanctions. But supporters are vowing to pressure GOP leaders until they bring legislation to the floor to address some, if not all, of the glaring deficiencies in the U.S. electoral system. For WHYY News, Matt Laszlo in Washington.
Today marks the 15th anniversary of a series of major power failures that hit the eastern United States and Canada. The outages affected an estimated 50 million people when traffic lights failed, subways were evacuated, and flights into six airports were stopped for several hours. A report later blamed the shutdown of a First Energy power plant that cut its supply to the main electrical grid, in turn causing an overload of other power supplies. Fast forward to today, and Pennsylvania experienced a record number of outages last year, and 2018 is shaping up to be another bad year. State Impact Pennsylvania's Amy Sisk reports that the grid may not be ready for more severe weather.
When the power goes out, calls to local utility companies come flooding in from people like Joan Petrillo with Martindale's Natural Market near Philadelphia. She must decide whether to send out an employee for dry ice to keep meat and other cold goods from spoiling.
You're talking about a store with very little storage space, so there's very little room to store dry ice. You just can't do it, so you have to buy it at the time that it's needed.
Sometimes food does go bad.
You're throwing out your livelihood, you know, what puts you in business, but you have to be safe.
Grocery stores, factories, hospitals, restaurants, they lost power more than ever last year, with 50 significant outages statewide. That's more than double the year before. Halfway through this year, the state's already seen 20. Katrina Kelly-Pitou is an energy researcher at the University of Pittsburgh. She advises utilities and says they can learn from recent extreme storms in Puerto Rico and Houston.
Invest now because it's way cheaper than investing later.
Climate change is expected to bring more intense weather.
I now don't know if we have time to say, let's try and figure out what to do. I think you have to be doing something to be proactive and keeping your lights on.
Pennsylvania utilities know this sound means trouble. Lightning, like during this recent storm over Pittsburgh, excessive rain, landslides, wind, ice in the winter, it can all damage equipment. Warren Stow is director of field operations for Duquesne Light in Pittsburgh.
It can put a lot of stress on your organization. Typically, it wouldn't be unusual for our employees to work 16 on, 8 off until we have the power back on.
That happened a lot last year. Duquesne had six big outages with more than 2,500 customers in the dark for longer than 6 hours. The commission warns that if frequent severe weather continues, utilities will struggle to maintain adequate service. The PUC can make poorly performing utilities create improvement plans. Several have such plans right now. Spokesperson Nils Hagen Fredrickson says the commission talks with utilities all the time about hardening their systems.
We know weather is coming. Regardless of the tempo of the weather, there will at some point in the future be another hurricane. There will at some point in the future be another torrential rainstorm.
Utilities are cutting back trees near power lines. They're installing digital meters to monitor power usage. And they're looking at microgrids, which create and distribute electricity for clusters of businesses or homes. Hagen Fredrickson says utilities need to ensure these two things.
Reliability is, can you take a punch? Resilience is how fast you get back up off the canvas after you've been hit hard.
Duquesne Light's crews are preparing for more storms. At the service center, trucks roll out for the day. Stow explains.
When I came in, I don't think we had any customers out, so they're all going out right now. They're going to be working on what we refer to as projects.
Installing new transformers and poles and auto switches to reroute power. Duquesne also wants faster response times. Operations Center Director Diane Holder says the company is developing a detailed map of its grid.
An electric model will provide their electric address to us, their precise location on a circuit.
The company will know exactly who's lost power, and it'll install a new system to react to outages and keep customers informed.
They could select the type of communication they would like back from Duquesne Light, whether it be a text, an email, or phone call, and get regular updates throughout their outage as far as our progress.
So businesses such as grocery stores can make plans, like whether to run across town to stock up on dry ice. Amy Sisk, State Impact, Pennsylvania.
State Impact Pennsylvania is a collaboration between WHYY, WITF, WESA, and the Allegheny Front, covering the Commonwealth's energy economy. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov, Kimberly Haas, and Brett Rader. Find us on your favorite podcast app or listen back at whyy.org/news. Tomorrow evening, we'll hear from a Philadelphia-area father whose son was sexually abused as a minor by a trusted priest. We'll learn his perspective on how families are dealing with the release of today's scathing report. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Heller, NewsWorks Tonight.